Again, please do not misunderstand this. Just as the man who owns the saw expects a certain amount of wear and tear, because that is natural, no matter how well you take care of it, every time you sharpen that saw, it is wearing away those teeth. God expects our bodies in some degree to wear out, and they are going to. The day we are born is the day we begin to die. But that does not give us any right to deliberately, on our fault, make that death come more quickly. Unless there is truly some justified reason for it, that is never permitted by the commandments of God. The normal way that God designs it is not to do any damage to our soul or the body, but to follow His laws of nature, the moral laws, the divine laws, which all come down to living the eternal laws of God. Another parable type story I might relate to help us understand why we should avoid disorder, chaos, and confusion in our lives, and the need to have order and logic and to see how God wants us to operate, it is to think of the cattle dog or the sheep dog that the rancher has. When you go out to the back 40 to bring in the cattle, you send out the dog ahead of you when you get in sight of the cattle. If you have a real good cattle dog, as long as you can still see him, you could give him the signals with your arm. He will bring those cattle back to you, or drive them to the north, or drive them to the south. Whatever your commands are, the dog will try and do for you. From this we can understand that some of God's creatures are to obey others of them. The dog obeys the man, and the cattle obey the dog. It is much the same way in the hierarchical structure of the church. We may think of the bishop as the master. Then he has his helpers to preach the religion, that is, the priests who are as his dogs to help round up the cattle, the rest of the faithful. The priests, if they have good directions, can control and bring the cattle where they should be for their own betterment. If you have just one good cattle dog, he can actually control many cows. It is like a good priest, maybe St. John Mary Vianney as an example, who can control many in his flock. If the master goes out to the back 40 with the dog and gives him the signal to drive the stock to the north, and just when the dog has them rounded up and they're headed in that direction, he reverses it and tries to get the dog to drive the cattle to the south. With a lot of effort, the dog finally did that job. They were going south. The master whistled again and told the dog, gave him the signal to drive them to the north again. All the master is doing is causing the cattle to get very nervous, ready for a stampede, wearing out his dog and getting nowhere except in more and more trouble. Because then that dog is soon going to be so confused, he will not know what to do. Pretty soon, no matter how well he was trained, and no matter how he knows what he is doing, he cannot control the cattle anymore because of those many contrary orders, one after the other. There is no order anywhere.
Rosalie, I am at this time interrupting the 5-hour tape just to play a few excerpts from what you heard at the very beginning of this from the different talks that Father Dennis Philomena Marie gave when he spoke at the time that he had his break with Francis Schuchart. This parable about the cattle dog and the one that follows it about the wheat farmer have a lot to do with order in our lives and following God's commandments. And if the things that I spoke about on these tapes were just petty things, picking on faults and failings, which in no way would justify someone leaving the Congregation of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe, then it is difficult to understand that anything that Father Dennis Philomene Marie pointed out at the time he broke with Francis Schuchart would justify such a break. Maybe when Father heard these tapes in 83, and I'm not sure if he ever heard them afterwards, maybe he, like many people, just didn't know what these parables really mean. They should be very obvious. I just spoke about the master giving the contrary orders to the dog, drive the cattle north, to the south, to the north again, getting everyone confused and riled. Father just speaks in his sermon more plainly what took place. Receive a schedule. Then 10 minutes, we receive three contrary orders. There is school. There's not school. There is school. Mass is scheduled. 10 minutes later, it's canceled. 20 minutes later, it's scheduled again. Seems the same to me, whether you say in parable form or the real thing. I say it in parable form because it makes a bit deeper impression on myself anyway. Maybe it's because I'm like the proud Pharisee in the gospel. I'm not like the rest of men.
I don't think it would do you any harm. It will do you good to do what Our Lady did. She pondered over these things. But hopefully, at some point tomorrow, it will be possible to speak to the laity. And I really believe that once that's done, the air is going to get a little bit fresher and a little bit cleaner smelling. And I also believe that once that gets done, we can return to a normal, orderly religious life.
Now, I'm sure you are all aware of different crosses and contradictions in the course, especially of the past couple of years, which seem, with each passing day or week, to increase. A few examples would be the very erratic schedules pertaining to school, to the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, people missing Holy Communion on Easter Sunday, people coming to the Mount and spending all day long on a Sunday and then not able to stay and missing Mass on that Sunday, etc. And of course, this concerns us as priests because, as all of the books in the priesthood point out, it is our duty and our obligation to provide these sacraments to the Catholic faithful.
I know the bishop well enough to realize that if he were not as sick as he is, some of the things that are going on now would not be going on. We would not be waiting 2 months to celebrate feast days. We would not be waiting for weeks and months for the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. I've known him for 20 years. I've known him when his mind was clear. Last year on Corpus Christi, the bishop was so sick he could barely walk. And we took it upon ourselves to tell the brothers that were with him, there is no way he can be in that procession. He'll pass out with the Blessed Sacrament in his hand. And instead of their assisting us and helping us in that regard, they're over there trying to talk the bishop, forcing him to take part in the ceremonies. And while the Blessed Sacrament was being carried around in procession, we had to almost carry the bishop, literally, say the prayers ourselves in his ear so that he would repeat them. As far as I'm concerned, it was a scandal what had taken place. As Father Mary Benedict said, we are not in any way questioning the fact that the bishop is a bishop and that we are priests and that bishops have authority. But if it ever happens that a bishop or anyone in authority gets to the point where they are not functioning rationally, You don't just sit back and let this go on and let the community, the parish, or whatever, fall apart. And this is what's happening. And while this is taking place, these brothers are going around saying, the reason this is taking place is because of the disrespect on the part of the priests, the disobedience on the part of the priests, etc., etc., etc. On some occasions, we have gotten 3 telephone calls in regard to the same subject matter within 10 minutes, and each direction is different. You're told at night that there's no school. At 6 o'clock in the morning, you're told there is school. You're given a mass schedule, and 10 minutes before mass, you call up, and all the masses are canceled.
Does that sound like a master telling his dog to drive the cattle to the north, and then to the south, and then to the north again, till they're all confused and stampede and leave?
On Easter Sunday, we were 2 minutes away from calling up a mass schedule ourselves, because I could not justify no masses being said on Easter Sunday. So at 3 o'clock, you're told that there's a 3:30 mass. I went to Mount St. Joseph's, and there were 2 lay people there when I started mass. When I was finished, there were about 100, and most of them had missed mass. So we said a second mass. It is a teaching of the Council of Trent that a priest has a moral obligation to see to it that the faithful are allowed to attend Holy Mass and to receive the sacraments. If you as lay people came to us as priests and demanded the sacraments, we would be committing a mortal sin if we would not give you the sacraments.
In spite of all of this mess, again, I want to repeat to you, there is no reason for us to lose our faith. There is no reason for us not to stick together, to attend the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass and to receive the sacraments, and to make an effort to begin to live an orderly life instead of the chaos and the confusion. But all of this that is taking place, the decisions that have to be made with our head rather than our heart. This is a battle between truth and error and right and wrong.
He talked about the fact that he was not incompetent, and how does he prove this? They had a solemn high mass for Easter and a reception line. That's supposed to prove now that there's no problem. And again, there's a long list of things that could be gone into to shoot that down. Christmas and Lent. People being made to wait in hallways when you have 3-day seminars from 4 o'clock in the afternoon till 3 o'clock in the morning, and this was a pattern. And all of those things, and I'm not in any way being uncharitable. We offered those things up.
But it was
so chaotic. At the priory, we're cleaning out the mess that was left there. They thought they were being served with an eviction notice, the brothers. If they'd have picked up the papers and read what they were served, they could have stayed there till Friday and got everything out. So they left the papers lying on the floor, and they thought they were being evicted, and they left, and they left a lot of stuff there at the priory. We are finding checks. You want to know where your checks are? I'll show them to you when we get them all out of the boxes. Outdated checks from the San Diego seminar, outdated checks from the religious retreat in 1979 here at Mount St. Michael's, where we're incompetent, we can't handle finances, so we're supposed to turn them over to him, and they're stuffed in boxes and left there.
We have
the brothers and sisters were told under holy obedience that they could not discuss any problems in the confessional with any priest. Talk about a mess. There you have it.
If you want to hear any more about the mess, you can just review the tapes in the first part of this series of tapes.
The master got the dog all confused and the cattle all confused, and in a big stampede. Some are going to bolt and to run. They will run some through the fence and get them hurt. If there is a cliff there, you will probably run some over the cliff to their death. Others will be hurt as they run through the trees. And the rest may very well stampede as they run the dog and run right past the master even and hurt him. So we see that parents, superiors, and those in authority must work together. If one parent gives the child one command and the other parent comes along and contradicts it, that leaves a big problem. So it is in every order and every organization. Those who are operating it must work together, all for the betterment of the common good. As the popes bring out so clearly in their encyclical letters. Say the master did that. He went out and kept changing signals and got his dog confused and the cattle all stampeded and running wild to every place. Then he himself becomes angry and begins to curse and to swear and kicks the dog around. He might even want to kill him. That dog is probably going to run away. He is not going to stay around there if he can help it. And whatever, whose fault was it, really? The dog's fault for getting the cattle stampeded?
Or the master's fault for changing things in such a conflicting, disorderly fashion? There was no order any place where it should have been. Even when the commands of the master are very clear and very orderly, the dog still has a very difficult and dangerous duty. In the beginning, it usually involves a lot of barking until the herd learns to respect that dog. Then after a time, the herd gets to know the dog better, and he gets to know them better, and just his presence, he starts to round them up and doing his daily duty. He does not have to bark at them so much anymore to get them to do what they are supposed to do. But until the dog, so to speak, gets their respect, he may have to heel them a few times, a few nips here and there, for there always seems to be some in the herd who are as the renegades. There will be some old wild cow or some steer that will want to turn on that dog and do their best to get rid of him. That is much the same way it is with priests working with people. When you first begin in a new parish, you may have to do more barking, so to speak, more nipping of the heels, more severe type of corrections until you bring the people back from their worldly way of living. And then the time will come when, by your gentle manners, your kind commands, your very presence, means they will respect you. They will obey God for the love of God, and not for the fear of getting nipped at by their dog, by their priest. When the dog goes out to round up the herd, he may have to run from one to another, pick up all the stragglers. And so a pastor of souls goes from one parishioner to another to encourage them, to instruct them, to uplift them, to, so to speak, bring them back to the fold, to unite them with Jesus and Mary. And if the dog really knows what he is doing, he will thereby be fast enough and smart enough to even pick up the renegades. He will be fast enough to outrun them and smart enough to outwit them. And even the renegades will soon come around to doing what they should be doing. No matter how much they run him and try and do him in, he will eventually get them back to the herd. They will eventually respect him because of his mastery over them. If for no other reason, they will respect him because it seems he always gets in the best blows. And so it is and what you might call the renegades in the spiritual life. If everything was orderly and neat and running according to God's laws and commandments, eventually even the renegades would come back around to where they should be. But when there is so much chaos and confusion, then the dog cannot even keep a normally good herd in control. If you have a good cattle dog, he will certainly know how to go out there and round up the herd without barking and making a big fuss every time. He knows his business, and he will go out there and take it easy and gentle, be kind to them. Yes, he will demand respect, and he will receive it. But he knows what he is doing, and he will go about things in a calm way and not get the herd riled up and ready to stampede. It is obvious that a good dog will not get the herd ready to be stampeding and bolting away. Every time he goes out to work with them, he can round them up with ease, especially after he has been with them for a while, and they know him and he knows them. There will be no stampeding, nobody getting riled at all. The cattle will see the dog coming, and they will begin to round up and do what they know they must, because that dog knows how to take it gentle and easy and not bark at them all of the time. Oh, certainly, he knows when and how to bark, and he will do that, and he will nip their heels, but it becomes less and less frequent as they get to know him and respect him. Usually, the dog is a little more loved, and you might say, closer to the heart of the master than the cows. Although the rancher knows each of his cows by name, especially if he has a registered herd, he certainly knows his dog by name. The dog even goes to live in the house with him. He might even be allowed to sit by the table. He shares many things with him. He goes hunting and fishing with his master. He even has the responsibility of taking care of the master's children and watching over them in a special way. If the master takes good care of his dog, feeds him well, speaks to him kindly, pets him, is gentle to him, and shows him the proper affection, then the dog will do the work of the master very well and fulfill his daily duty, if that's the proper way to word it. But if that master often yells at the dog and kicks him and does not feed him when he should, he gives his dog many conflicting commands and orders. He is harsh to him. There seems to be little order any place. He treats his dog in a very cruel way. What do you expect the dog to do? Stay around there and accept it and live with that kind of a treatment? And even if the dog stays around, he will not perform and do things as he otherwise would have and should have, as if he would have been treated with meekness and kindness as normally should have been given to him. Observe what kind of dogs a rancher will choose to be his cattle dogs. The best ones are usually those with a gentle nature, but still are swift and know how to do their daily duty, such as a collie dog. I have never seen those who have a fighting nature, such as a bulldog, out there running the cattle, except when they're not supposed to be, nor do those who have a hunting nature usually make the better cattle dogs, such as the pointers and the setters. Nor do you see those show dogs, such as poodles, out there as cattle dogs. Nor do you see those little house dogs that do a lot of high-pitched barking and running around, but actually cannot accomplish much of anything except making noise and trouble. This observation then again teaches us that in God's divine plan there is a place for the men and another place for the women and another place for the children. To each one, God has a special role, and to each one, certain duties and obligations are imposed upon them. Each of us should be living according to the way God designed us, if that's the proper way to word it. If the rancher has a dairy herd instead of a stock herd, his cows will be waiting around the barn at least twice a day on a regular schedule. If he runs his nature on a good schedule, his cows will be there at 6 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock at night to be milked. He does not need to send out his dog to round up the cows and bring them in. They know when milking time is, and according to the laws of nature, they will be there where they belong. And that is much the same way it is in running the church and the spiritual life, it seems to me. If the bishop, pastors, and assistant priests run the parish the way they should, the people will be there when the church opens up for Mass at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they will be there again when the rosary and benediction are offered up at 6 o'clock in the evening. If they do not know when to come in, you may not ever round them up without great difficulty. As soon as the barn doors open, the cows come into the barn, go into their own stanchion, all on their own. They expect to be fed while they are in there. There should be hay down in the manger already, and the farmer will put some grain on it. That again is what Catholics expect if you compare it coming into their churches. As soon as you unlock the church in the morning, they will come in and take their place, and they expect to be fed with the spiritual food of the Mass and give them a little sermon, and then, so to speak, the grain by giving them the bread of life, that is, Holy Communion each day. If you want to have a good herd, you will give them that special bread and as much of the other hay as they desire and that they can digest. If a stranger comes in someday to milk the cows, they will not give down as much milk as when their normal rancher is there to take care of them. And so when some stranger comes along, you normally do not open up your conscience and your soul to him, at least until you get to know them. And then you might give even more than you did to the former spiritual director, just as the cows, once they get to know the stranger as their true friend, will open up and be just as generous as they were to the original farmer. You also might have observed that when a rancher has good music playing in his barn, such as Gregorian chant, it has a very good effect on his cows. They will actually give down more milk. But if he plays rock and roll music and weird music and acid music, it has a very bad effect on his cows. It seems to kind of confuse them even, and it definitely does have a direct effect on them. And certainly here it may be said, I know mine and mine know me. That cow knows who is milking it, when and how. And the rancher certainly knows the cow. When the rancher is milking the cow and she switches him with her tail, trying to get the flies off of her own back, the farmer does not get angry and slug her in the side and kick her and then start to curse and swear. He is still gentle, kind, and goes about it in a smooth, calm way, even if the cow gives him a rough time of it. He knows that the more he becomes angry, the more the cow will keep kicking over the bucket and giving him more problems. No, the good farmer, the wise farmer, will remain calm and gentle. Yes, correct the problem. Tie it up or tie it to the cow next to her. Yes, he will try and get rid of the problems, put the hobbles on the cow or something, but he will do it in a kind and gentle way. Otherwise, he only causes more and more problems. After the farmer is finished milking his herd, he will let them out of the barn. They will just kind of mill around, lay down, and chew their cud. They will digest what he has fed them in the barn. That is much the way it is with the Catholic when he leaves the church. He should go out and digest the spiritual food he has received, and of course continue his thanksgiving for the communion, graces, and blessings that God permitted him to receive. Then, after a certain amount of time, the cows go on about their daily duty so that they can produce more milk. And so the Catholic goes about his duties, living in the presence of God, so that he can become more virtuous and pleasing before his Lord and Master, producing more virtues and graces. The farmer knows that if he is not able to be there personally on time to milk his cows, he had better have somebody else there to do it. Even if the cows are not going to give down quite as much because they are milked by his sons or the hired hand, the farmer will certainly still have his sons or hired hands to take care of his herd when he cannot be there himself. In time, the cows will get to know his sons or hired hands and get to know them very well. But I repeat, if the farmer is not there and nobody else is there, the herd will be ruined, and quickly. He will have many problems on his hands, and he will produce little fruit, he will obtain little milk, and soon he will probably have to close down the dairy because he did not tend to his business and take care of his herd. It is somewhat a reminder of what Jesus told us when he said how he had compassion on the multitudes because they were as sheep without a shepherd. This is the way the majority of those who call themselves Catholics in the world today have been and are now treated by those who should have been their good shepherd. These pseudo-clerics do not feed their flocks. They are not there to take care of them. They give them all kinds of false doctrines and poisonous products. It has caused nothing but chaos, confusion, and disorder in what is known as the Church, the Catholic Church that Jesus Christ founded. This way of doing things is completely contrary to what we have always known to be the ways of the Catholic Church. In the Catholic Church, you will always find goodness, truth, and beauty, order, neatness, harmony, and true love. Another parable-type story that might be related in order to help us understand even more strikingly the need to live according to God's laws and commandments comes to mind when you read the gospel story, when Jesus tells us the harvest is great and the laborers are few. Pray therefore the Lord of the harvest to send laborers into his harvest. How many thousands of acres do you think it would take for all of the people on the earth to come together in one location and stand an arm's length apart? It seems that it would take a very lot of territory, at least as much as the whole Northwest. Now we shall consider a farmer who owns as much land as there is in the states of Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. If you could go up to a statue and touch it and breathe upon it and thereby change its nature from an inanimate object to a human being like yourself, that would indeed be a great miracle. That is somewhat the way you might explain sanctifying grace. That is what sometimes spiritual authors consider baptism doing for us. Before, we only had human nature, and now Almighty God, a divine being, lives within us. The moment we are properly baptized, it is a much greater thing to raise human nature up to the divine than it is simply to raise an inanimate object and make it into a human being. So again, we consider the 5 to 6 billion souls that live on earth that we have now standing in the Northwest as statues. In all probability, most people in the world today are lacking in sanctifying grace. If they ever were properly baptized, they probably lost sanctifying grace since that time by committing a mortal sin. It seems there are very few laborers to go out there and, so to speak, touch them, breathe upon them, and bring them into, again, the state of being children of God and heirs to the kingdom of heaven. There are great multitudes of people living on earth now who need sanctifying grace in their souls. Saint Denis has told us that there is no greater work we can do while on earth than be an instrument in the hands of God in working for the salvation of souls. With this realization of how many souls there are in the world who need help, who need sanctifying grace, let us consider the wheat farmer who has as much land to combine as there are in the 4 states of the Northwest. He has all of this property planted into a good wheat crop. In this parable, we can consider that there will be no towns or any such thing, just one very large, good wheat crop. Let us consider then that this wheat farmer only has one combine. It is now time to harvest. He therefore begins over where the state of Washington meets the Pacific Ocean at the northwest. That is next to the country of Canada in the top part of the state of Washington. From there, this farmer begins driving his combine east. While harvesting wheat, you can only drive that combine maybe 3 to 5 miles per hour. So how far do you think that farmer will make it on his first lap around his large field? You do not have all year to harvest wheat. There's only about a month or so from the time it is ripe enough to harvest until it has gone to seed, and there's no need to harvest it anyway. So again, how far will you get driving just 3 to 5 miles per hour, and you can only work certain hours of the day? It is true that the farmer may wish to cut both day and night, try and get as much of that crop in as he can, but there happens to be what we call God's natural laws which prevent him from doing so. When it gets along toward 9 or 10 o'clock at night, the dew begins to come in and the farmers have to shut down according to God's natural law. You cannot cut the wheat when it gets too wet from the dew. You cannot get going in the morning until the sun comes up and the dew leaves. So we have this farmer who certainly has a large field to cut, and if he is wise, he will have his equipment running every minute that he can. If that farmer is sick or lazy or for some other reason does not begin cutting his wheat until 3 or 4 or 5 in the evening, he will certainly not cut very much compared to what he should have for that day. Consider the other numbers of truckloads of wheat he could have gotten into the elevator if he had only lived his life according to the laws that God has laid down, if he would have only started cutting as soon as God permitted in the morning when the dew left. I repeat, he may want to run in the night schedule, but the laws of God prevent him from doing it that way. What will happen then if the farmer stays up all night at a party and out chasing around in the town when he should have been home taking his proper rest? Even if he does get up early in the morning and get his equipment greased and fueled up, oiled and ready to go, he will probably still be so tired if he starts that he will not be able to drive his combine straight, which means he will run out of the line where he should have been going and only have his header about half full or less, or else he will run inside and skip a lot of the wheat he should have cut down, which means he will have to waste time and money and effort to go back and cut it again, or else simply just skip it. He will have a big mess in his field, and all others who see it will look upon him with ridicule, thinking he is certainly not a very wise and prudent farmer. And certainly he will be losing a lot of the profit if he runs his combine during harvest time in such a way as that, or else he might even be so tired and careless and disorderly that he runs off into some thistle patch, and thereby he ruins everything. He gets so many thistles into the good crop he already cut that he gets so docked at the elevators it's hardly worth his time to have cut anything. Or again, he may even be so very careless that he lets a big rock run up into the header, thereby certainly causing a lot of downtime, ruining a lot of his equipment. It is so very important to be able to keep cutting down the wheat during harvest time that a prudent farmer, a wise farmer, will do most anything to keep his equipment running. And especially because he did waste his time and not start harvesting till late in the afternoon, he may wish to try and make up for lost time by going faster, run the combine in road gear. But that just does not work. According to God's laws, he can only go so fast, and the wise, he simply just plugs up the combine, and that really cost him more time than if he had just gone at the speed that God had designed. For now he has to stop everything and get down in there, do a lot of hard work, get everything unplugged before he can start harvesting his wheat once more. So we see that he did lose much time. He should have just gone according to God's laws and the way they, and run the equipment the way it was designed to operate. The farmer also needs to know how to adjust his equipment when the wheat goes from the header on up into the combine. If the farmer has the wind turned on too strong, he will just be blowing the wheat right on out the back along with the shaft, instead of putting it up into the bulk tank. And if the wind is not strong enough to blow the shaft away, the wheat still just goes right on out the back. So he has to know how to operate his equipment according to the laws laid down for it by the one who designed it. That might be compared to the prudence needed to properly correct others. If you correct them too harshly and severely, there's a good probability you will just drive them out the back. You will not save them, as was the purpose of the correction in the beginning.